When Braj and I got back to the sledge, dragging the fuel and the energy bars, we found Laro and Dag kneeling, face to face, holding each other's hands and mumbling so rapidly that I couldn't make out a single word. I had never seen any behavior quite like it, and had to watch them for a few moments before I collected that they were praying. Then I felt embarrassed. I stepped back to get out of Braj's way in case he wanted to join them, but the look on his face as he regarded the Diolaters was contemptuous. He caught my eye and jerked his head back toward the flaps. I joined him outside. Both of us were hooded, goggled, and swathed against the cold. Frost grew with visible speed on our face masks as we talked. Braj had been checking his watch every few minutes since we had been abandoned.
"It's been a quarter of an hour," he said.
"If those guys haven't come back for us in 2 hours, we have to save ourselves."
"You really think they'd leave us here to die?"
Braj chose not to answer that question, but he did offer,
"They might get into a situation where they have no choice. Maybe they can't get fuel, maybe their tractor breaks down, or the military commandeers it. Point being, we have to have our own plan."
"I have a pair of snowshoes."
"I know. We have to make 3 more. Load up your water pouch."
The suit sacks had pouches on the front that could be stuffed with snow. Over time, it would melt and become drinking water. That consumed energy, but it was sustainable as long as the body had food or the suit sack had fuel. We had both, for the time being. We packed ours as full of snow as we could. We replenished our fuel bladders from the cache that the drivers had left for us. Braj interrupted the others' prayers and insisted they also take on water and fuel. Then he had us each eat a couple of energy bars. Only then did we get working. The tent was held up by flexible metal poles. We collapsed it and drew them out. This had the side effect of getting Laro and Dag's attention. Our shelter was gone. They had no choice but to join in our plan. Braj had a pocket tool with a little saw blade. He went to work cutting the tent poles into shorter segments. Once the others saw that there was work to be done, they joined in cheerfully. Dag, who was the sturdier of the two, took over the sawing of the tent poles. Braj had Laro get to work scavenging every inch of rope and twine at our disposal. Then, perhaps leading by example, he undid the yellow rope that he had used to gird his suitcase. This turned out to be some 30 feet long. He undid the latches and dumped out the contents, hundreds of tiny vials, all packed in loose nodules of foam. I hadn't seen such things before, but I guessed that these were pharmaceuticals.
"Child support,"
Braj explained, reading the look on my face. The panels of the suitcase were a tough, leathery material that we cut into slabs to make the platforms of the snowshoes. We bent the tent poles to make crude quadrangular frames and lashed the suitcase panels to them using twine from Laro's and Dag's improvised baggage. This took a while because we had to do it with bare fingers, which went numb in a few seconds. The contents of Laro's and Dag's baggage were mostly old clothes, which they were willing to abandon, and keepsakes of their families, which they weren't. I pulled one of the benches off of the sledge, flipped it upside down, and kicked its flimsy legs off. It would serve as a toboggan. We loaded it with supplies and wrapped them up in what remained of the tent. My pack had already been stripped of its metal frame and of anything that would serve as rope. I added my energy bars and my stove to the supplies, threw away my extra clothes, and put my bolt, my cord, and my sphere, peeled down as small as it would go, into the cargo pockets on the body of my suit sack. I considered adding my cord to our stock of rope, but we seemed to have plenty. Laro had found a 50-foot coil stored under one of the sledge's benches, and we'd been able to make up another 50 by splicing together odds and ends from the tent's rigging and so on. That, plus Braj's 30 feet of yellow stuff, gave us enough that we were able to rope ourselves together at intervals of 30 or 40 feet, which Braj explained would be useful if one of us lost his footing on a steep slope or fell into a crevasse. These preparations consumed almost 4 hours, so we set out late according to Braj's timetable. The convoy down below seemed as though it had not moved an inch. Braj estimated that it was 2,000 feet below us. He said that if everything goes to hell, we should just pull the ripcord and let ourselves slide down the ice to the valley floor, where we could throw ourselves on the mercy of the military. They might arrest us, but they probably wouldn't let us die. It was a last resort, however, because if we tried it, we stood a good chance of falling into a crevasse before we reached the bottom. Braj took the lead. He was armed with a length of tent pole that he would use to probe the snow ahead of him for crevasses. At his hip, he had his sticker, a long, heavy-bladed knife. He claimed that if one of us fell into a crevasse, he would throw himself down and jam this into the ice, anchoring himself so as to arrest our fall. He had me go last and saw to it that I was armed with an L-shaped piece of metal scavenged from the frame of my pack, which I was to use in the same manner. He even had me practice throwing myself down face first and jamming the short leg of the thing into the ice. Dag, then Laro, were roped up between us. The toboggan trailed behind me.